My name's Jane Trowell. I'm working with a group called Platform, who are based in London. And Platform is a group of...
Woo! Oi, oi.
You're going to have to include that.
You're listening to Tunnel Vision, a 10-part series in which me, Bruno Involucri, leads a collection of writers, musicians, activists and academics through London's sewer system, inviting them to explore the space historically and acoustically. Each week, the series offers listeners a different take on the miles of forgotten Victorian tunnel that stretch beneath London's surface. This week, Jane Trowell walks the tunnels below Brockwell Park, remembering her work with Platform, an artist environmentalist collective who've been campaigning for the daylighting of London sewers for the past 20 years. We join Jane as she finds her feet in the pitch black tunnels that make up the Effra Sewers storm relief system.
Right, let's start again. My name's Jane Trowell. I work with a group called Platform, who are based in London. Platform is a group of activists, campaigners, researchers and artists who work on a range of environmental issues and human rights issues. And in December 1991, when I joined Platform, we started researching London's buried and misused tributaries to the Thames. In other words, we were starting to look at London as a river city, but not just the Thames, but all the rivers that flow into the Thames. There are 56 in the Greater London area. And we began to conceive of a project which would propose that the rivers that are currently buried or trashed or polluted or sewerized should be unburied, unearthed and restored, and so that London could become a city of rivers rather than a city of roads with just this one major channel at the bottom of the hills. So it's kind of really amazing, whatever it is, 17, 18 years later, to be walking along what could be part of the Effra here under Brockwell Park. Nearly fell over.
So, in terms of your work with the sewers, like your practical work, where are you coming from, like, in terms of activism, like we were talking before about the 19th century?
Well, we never accepted that the solution to London's sewage problems was to sewerise the tributaries to the Thames. This was the solution which Joseph Bazalgette proposed to Parliament to solve the problems of people basically dumping their effluent into the rivers and hoping that the rivers would carry the effluent away. That had been the historic use of the rivers. As well as for drinking and cleaning and all the rest of it. So you can imagine the 19th century London had a huge amount of outbreaks of cholera and disease. And so there was a very, very urgent need to solve this problem. But our position was that the solution was a shift in attitude to fresh water, not to say, okay, we've fucked up the rivers by crapping in them for centuries, and now they're pestilential, so actually let's just admit it and turn them into sewers. To us that was a techno fix, the kind of Victorian grandiose imperial mind would love, which is this grand scheme to build this extraordinary network of tunnels and to use fresh spring water that would rise on Hampstead Heath or Crystal Palace or beyond to push, you know, human waste along and take it out to sewage treatment works east and west. So we felt that was a disastrous solution And also given that there were proposals that were made to Parliament for earth closets. EC, no, not WC. Which now, of course, anybody interested in environmental issues will know very well about compost toilets and all the rest of it. And of course, many parts of the world, this is what people have been doing for centuries anyway, which is that human waste, as long as it is dried out, becomes, after 1 year, completely fantastic compost for crops, etc., etc. So, you know, you wouldn't have to use fresh spring water to push human waste, which is such an abuse of that resource. So that's kind of what, that was our position. And we also saw it as a metaphor for the state of London at that point, which was that London in the early 90s was, had no representative government, it was in a sorry state in terms of its democracy, and we're just climbing over some kind of grill covered in bits of plastic. And I can tell you, because I know from stuff we did on the River Wandle, that a lot of that plastic are the from sanitary towel plastic. The plastic's inside a sanitary towel, because that's what you fish out of grills in the river everywhere. Anyway, on we go. So we also felt that a river, a city with its rivers flowing, is a direct expression of a city in touch with its environment and its geology and its nature and health and beauty and flow and all the rest of it. And that a city that buries its rivers is a city in denial of nature and flow and blah, blah, blah. I can't walk as fast as you. Sorry.
No, it's probably a good direction.
So these tunnels, the thing was lined with a sort of slight slime to about a metre high.
Yeah, it's weird to see the kind of flood level.
Whoa, it's very, very slippery actually, Bruno, if we could walk a bit more slowly.
Sure, yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah, because in the deeper parts, when the river's actually flowing, below there's almost like a layer of fat.
Yeah.
In fact, if we carried on walking along this tunnel for quite a long time, we'd get to a really fast-flowing bit that we tried to walk up it, but it was too fast. And there was there's a railing here that you could use. So we walked up it for maybe 50 metres and then thought, no, this isn't going to happen. That's a car going. But so on the way back, because there was a lining of fat on the tunnel and there was a railing in a fast-flowing river, we could literally just go like that and hold on to the thing.
Jesus.
And be propelled
amazing.
Along the tunnel.
Oh,
amazing.
Horrible.
But
what an acoustic.
Yeah.
But this is this tiny trip that we're in the storm relief system, aren't we, really?
Yeah, this is fully the storm relief system. What we, at the very end of this, which we probably won't get to because it's quite far away, is like a fast-flowing section that kind of almost cuts across it,
right?
And reconnects. Like, we don't know for certain whether or not that's the Effer or whether that's just kind of one of the main sewers.
Shit! God, it's so
slippery. Yeah, it's quite difficult.
But it's not at all smelly.
No.
Which is a bit surprising, but then that's because this isn't really part of the sewage system; it's the storm relief system. Because the lower stretches of the rivers are part of the storm relief system. The upper stretches feed their spring water into the main transverse sewers, which push the sewage out to Crossness in the north and in the east, northeast, and Erith in the southeast. So we're not in the smelly bit.
That's kind of where you're coming from, like theoretically, or but practically, what kind of stuff did Platform do?
Well, I mean, we generated a great deal of interest in this subject. We did in 92. We did a 30 days of events on four watercourses along four rivers: the Walbrook, the Fleet, the Effra, and the Wandle. The Wandle is in fact open, but it's more like a canal than a river. So depleted and doesn't look like a river at all. And people really, really picked up on it and what we were doing. It seemed to be such a universal subject, you know, water and the abuse of water and the burying in this place. And we never saw it as our job to actually start working with Canada Council or Lambeth Council and start proposing that we should dig these things up, but that we platform should. But we did wonder whether or aim at provoking a desire for that. And in fact, the projects in Hearn Hill, just right here, the EFRA Redevelopment Agency project that was part of our bigger project, Still Waters, excited the then Friends of Brockwell Park to the extent that they started sort of beginning to campaign with the council to open a stretch of the EFRA in Brockwell Park, because it would be sort of easier to do it in a park than to do it underneath, you know, a suburban street. And that got, you know, a fair amount of way along the way, but it's a massive technical job just to tamper with the storm relief system or the sewage system. And also, we went to so many conferences. We were invited to give papers and presentations at so many conferences, including conferences of hydrologists and all the rest of it. And the point was very, very clear that you could even actually ask the question, can we actually say there's still a River Ephra? We can say there's still a spring up in on top of Crystal Palace Hill and beyond. You know, you can certainly go and see the springs on Hampstead Heath of the Tyburn, the Westbourne, the Fleet, the Brent. But what happens to those streams? Can you call them rivers? I don't know. Where are we now? Do you know where that one goes?
No, we, like this one and the one we just passed, is stuck. So they just don't open. But what we've done with a few of them is put paper up them to try and walk above ground and find them. But it's really difficult to know where it goes. Like there's
a GPS or something.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't work. Like you could climb to the top of the ladder possibly and use it, which would be quite good. But yeah, it's totally disorientating because in the Brixton Water Lane manhole, if you go down there, where we would have walked, if you can do this kind of 3-hour long triangle, which you don't know is a triangle, it's totally impossible to know, and then you come out about 50 metres down the road from Brixton Water Lane.
Amazing.
And it's just unbelievable because you just think, where the hell am I? And then the other direction is Clapham North, where we came out of once, and we were just like, what?
Yeah.
We thought we were in West Dulwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I mean, in terms of where we are here, I've got no idea.
I mean, I just realised that we did get into some quite heavy conversations, which might be interesting to remember. So we got there's an organisation called the London Rivers Association, and they mainly advocate for the Thames and for the open rivers, the Lee, the Ravensbourne, and Brent, and the Wandle, etc., etc. And they work quite closely with what's now called the Environment Agency, which all those years ago was called the National Rivers Association. And anyway, they heard about our work, and we started kind of talking quite a lot about what we were doing. And whenever they knew anything about London as a watershed, we got quite a lot of invitations to come and talk at their events. And we talked at one event where there were people from the City of London there, the Corporation of the City of London, and we talked a lot about the Walbrook on purpose, which flows arguably from just beyond the edges of Finsbury Circus and down to to the tent at Cannon Street area. And we talked quite seriously about the prospects of digging it up and it being such a short river, arguably the shortest, but yet the most significant, because it was the river that the Romans identified as the central river between two hills, the hill that now has St Paul's on it and the hill that has Bank on it. Yeah? So a very symbolic river phenomenon. Anyway, we got this very concerned letter, I should have brought it actually, from the Corporation of London Chief Engineers. I think they were very concerned that we were going to start taking direct action or campaigning on it, giving us a sort of order of cost of what it would mean to think about rerouting or opening up the River Fleet or the River Wilbur, because they're both within their boundaries. And there, you know, it was millions and millions and millions of pounds. So one of my colleagues wrote back and said, but hey, you're thinking, you know, the government's thinking you're putting another lane around the M25. You know, what are our priorities here? So we've managed to kind of agitate and get our message out to sort of quite a sort of high level. But we, in the past 10 years, we haven't actively campaigned on this subject, but it keeps coming up, you know, as it's come up today with you doing this work. And there have been so many more books published around underground London, underground rivers. I think there's a lot more interest. And the funny thing is, of course, Boris Johnson really dismayed us last year by announcing that he was interested in London's lost rivers, which is quite politically confusing because, you know, the platform doesn't agree with Boris on 99.999% of everything else that he's doing, probably with the exception of cycling. So, I mean, there's a very good book I was looking at yesterday, coming out of the States. In the States they've done a lot of river restoration, but usually of the daylighting variety. And this book's called Restoring Rivers and Streams, and it's by Anne Riley. And I was just checking that it does not deal with de-sewerizing. You know, it's just such a different thing. But you know, I think we have to play a long game with this one. It's the only way you can play it. So we've never yet given in and said, nah, it can't be done. Of course it can be done. All these things can be done. It's about political will. The other reason to tackle the de-sewerising of these rivers is that London has a very, very, very real threat of flood. Now, at the moment, if you have a storm surge up the Thames, you know, the Thames barrier is working, you know, 9 times harder a year than it was intended to. And we're relying on that Thames barrier for everything. And of course, with climate change, storm surges are becoming more likely and more frequent. And the sea level is rising anyway in the southeast of England. So, and Boris, to his credit, though I hate to say that, did mention this, to actually open the natural tributary to the Thames in central London will increase the capacity of the Thames.
Oh. You alright?
To cope. No, don't actually. To cope with storm surge. That was a good one.
So there's actually a long term argument.
Because you see, the fleet at Blackfriars is probably the original the mouth of the fleet. It's 100 metres wide. I don't know if you can picture Blackfriars in your mind's eye, but the Unilever building on the north side has a sort of curved frontage, arced frontage. That gives you an indication of the breadth of the fleet at that point. Fleet was one of the very big rivers, tributaries. And then the Fleet up to sort of Holborn was about 20 metres wide, right? Think about how much volume of water that could absorb with a very high tide or a storm surge. And I think that's a very, very strong reason for re-examining the sewerising of London's rivers.
So is there any kind of engineers or scientists who've done work in this kind of area or that you know of or you've been talking to?
Well, as I say, recently we've not been completely plugged into this matter, although we do try and follow any news. We did come across a project at UCL that was looking at the Fleet, and again it would be worth looking at who Boris has been talking to about this plan. So I can't really give you any hard information on that. But it's got to be a factor. There is nowhere for that water to go. So there are so many reasons why this could be a really, really brilliant future for London. And one of them is a very, very practical one around dealing with climate change and possible threat to London in terms of flooding.
So can you just describe what the Unearth the Ephra project was in a bit more detail?
Yeah. Unearthing the Ephra was the name of one of the sub-projects of Stillwaters project that we did in 1992. And there are two of us worked on that. One was John Jordan, who's an artist, activist, who worked very closely at that time. And the other was Andrea Phillips, who was involved in sort of arts and culture publicity and marketing. And John particularly wanted to work with Andrea because he had this idea that that we should recreate or create a complete sort of facsimile of a regeneration agency. And in the early 90s there were these things everywhere, which maybe they've now become normal, but they were fairly new at the time, which was regeneration agencies, allegedly about public consultation. And they were these places were quite problematic because was it really public consultation? I don't know. Usually not. And so he was the publicist, which is how Andrea described herself at the time. It's not what she does now, but. And they created in a disused shopfront in Pern Hill, just near here, this regeneration agency, the EFRA Redevelopment Agency, ERA. And they had promo video, they commissioned an architect to make a model of the entire EFRA watershed if the EFRA was open and how the roads would be rerouted. And they created a historical and futurological exhibition. And they had a whole season of events over the month. And they opened it like an office, 9:30 to 5:30 with evening events. And they themselves were, the redevelopment workers. They were in role for the whole month. And a huge number of people came through the doors. It generated a great deal of interest and lots of controversy. And we got lots and lots and lots of press for that project because it was proposing it as if it was going to happen. Yeah, it wasn't just proposing it, it was saying, in the manner of all the redevelopment stuff going on at that time. it was mock consultation, like it was going to happen, but we're going to sort of consult you just because. And the reality was it was part of this Arts Council funding project, but nobody knew that. It was very, very provocative and controversial, and you could say ethically controversial because it was pulling a fast one on the locals. Okay. On the other hand, it did provoke a massive amount of awareness of the Ephra. And local historians and all kinds of environmentalists, it was amazing. So yeah, it was a tremendous example of one of our projects.
How did it end?
Well, this was the bit where it became ethically a bit tricky because it sort of vanished after 1 month, it just disappeared. Leaving kind of legacy of the provocation. Which, maybe is a bit you could question that kind of, but Friends of Brockwell Park, we did remain involved with them, and as I say, they became very interested in Brockwell Park having a section of flowing river, but hydrologically it was never going to happen. You can't just do that because there is no flow before that point, it's all been rerouted. But it was an incredible example of getting something into the hearts and souls and feet and minds of people, which is what I guess we tried to do. Wow, I got a whole arseful of whatever is on the floor.
How wet are you? You got wet.
Pretty wet. That's fine. I have sat in the Ephra.
Shall I go and open the
I think you should, actually. Okay, what's the secret?
If you just get your arm on that edge, you can kind of haul yourself out.
Sitting on my salty bottom. Oh, shit.
Thanks for listening to Tunnel Vision. For more information on the series or any of its contributors, please contact brinvolucri@yahoo.co.uk. Tune in next week to hear Hooting Yarl's Frank Key cough and splutter his way through the cramped tunnels below West Dulwich to lament the forgotten histories of the Puckington tunnels and Pointy Town sewers.